Hello, how are you, Joanne?
Okay, how are you? I'm actually in the car where we were out running some errands while cleaning people were there. So, I'm hoping to get home soon. Yeah. How are you doing?
We're fine.
Were you on the meeting last night?
Yes, we were.
Yeah, that was a long meeting.
You think?
Yeah.
And we were doing it on Michael's computer. And I was sitting in a bridge chair. And oh my God, after I got up, it was like, oh God. mistake.
So you didn't lose your power, huh?
No, we didn't. Did you?
It was flickering on and off, and it kept kicking me off. And I lost the Wi-Fi, so I went on, you know, my right non-Wi-Fi. And then it stabilized, and I just stayed on my phone because my iPad stopped working. So, but I didn't try to go back on. Hey, Ruth.
Hi
Ruth. How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good.
Hey, Ruth. Did you find a good Chinese restaurant?
Did you see that?
Yes.
I got so many replies. I have to collate them.
I know. I think people are just like so happy to like have something to say or something. Everybody offers.
Are you looking for a good Chinese restaurant? I didn't see it.
Yeah.
It was on Next Door Neighbors or whatever it is.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know that one?
I like the one in Fox Mill.
That was
good. Yeah, we've been to that one. Hunanis.
Yeah, yeah.
Do they have outside pickup?
Yes.
Oh.
You call an order, and when you get there, you call them, and they put it on a table outside, and you just get it.
That's what I want. So what's it called?
Hunan East.
Oh, Hunan.
Yeah, someone recommended it.
Right, I remember that now. I'll write it down again.
I was supposed Hunan. To... supposed to bring my earbuds so I could hear better, and I forgot them.
Oh.
Hopefully I'll be home in not too long. So
where are you?
We're in the car. We were out running some errands, so I sit in the car and Ron runs.
Any escape, right?
Right. I don't go anywhere. I was going down to my office like once every couple of weeks, but I don't know what the situation is because it's at DuPont Circle, and it's not a question of what's going on at DuPont. I'm more,
right.
I'm not sure which way I can go in. I have a friend, I think he goes in on 14th Street Bridge, and he says he had no problem. So I don't know.
Yeah. Shirley, I like your hair.
Yeah.
Doing whatever it does.
It looks good.
It looks cute. Uh-huh. Very nice.
Very cute. You've had color in it, though, a number of times. You like doing that.
What, like put a color in?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I do it. Right.
Phyllis didn't think she would be here today.
Hi, Betty.
Okay.
Hello.
Everything okay?
Yeah, she just had someone coming to clean her carpet, actually.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, on my phone, I can't do the array. I can only see one person at a time. So.
Yeah, it's harder to do that on the phone. But that's okay.
Yeah, hopefully I'll be home soon.
Morning.
So Ruth, what were some of the recommendations you got?
Something called chopsticks and Mandarin at the Home Depot shopping center.
I've never done that.
What is that?
What?
Chinese food places.
Oh.
Somebody mentioned on the Havdalah.
Dark.
What?
Hard to see people.
Can you do the array?
No.
Oh, oh, you're here, Phyllis.
See you.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm so happy to see all of you. I've been so happy to welcome Nell.
I'm so happy to be here.
Hey. Hi.
All you lovely people. Oh. Joanne, you're not allowed to close your eyes, though. Not till you get
home. She's not driving.
No, I'm not driving.
Oh, you're not driving? Okay.
No, my husband's driving.
Oh, okay. Then you're allowed to close your eyes. You might want to close your eyes. I know when my husband's driving, I want to close my eyes.
Yeah. So. I want to.
I just go like, get me home. It's okay.
Right. Yeah, it's so. He's telling me, no, it's the opposite. When I'm driving, he wants to close his eyes.
Works both ways.
Yes, it does.
All right. Well, people will come and go, and that's totally fine. So I'm going to invite you to settle into where you are. You know, some of you are in cars, you're on floors, you're on chairs, you're inside, you're outside, you're in a seat. But like, feel where you are. Let it envelop you. Feel where you're supported. Feel like, and let whatever has been up until this moment sort of just be next to you, not in you right now. Okay, Phyllis, got it. So as you sit, you can close your eyes if you like, breathe a little bit. I'm gonna read a short meditation and then let's just sit for a few minutes and just let be what will arise for you, right? So this practice is just for right now, even before we start and I talk a little bit, just to let your breath be, notice body that it might be difficult or uncomfortable or comfortable. Just notice the thoughts and the sensations that arise and just be present to them without judging them, without trying to change them, without trying to adjust them. Just be with them, right? That's a lot of what this practice is. And then we bring in different ideas, Jewish ideas and other ideas to help us use who we are to be more present and to be able to navigate life better with these values. So this is from one of my teachers, Rabbi Sheila Weinberg. Taking a moment to breathe, a few conscious inhales and exhales. Now pausing, perhaps after the third or fourth exhale, and waiting for the next breath to arise. Waiting to be breathed. Noticing any effort to pull the breath toward you. Just waiting to be breathed. Allowing inhale to turn into exhale. Waiting again. Receiving. Being breathed, resting in the miracle of this breath and the next, now and again, resting in the breath, in each breath, with confidence in the divine breathing. I was thinking for a moment, as I'm looking at all of you, what was her name on Romper Room? I see Isabel, I see Nell, I see, can't remember when she would like, you're all older, you're my age and older.
Miss Nancy on Channel 13 in Baltimore.
Right, and she would like name everybody. I want to name everybody. I want to recognize everybody who's here because like I know I see you all. And Carol, Joanne's away from her phone right now, and Shirley, and Phyllis, and Karen, and Betty, and Ruth, and Linda. Like it's beautiful to be with you. And I just like, I don't want to take for granted that I see you all, that I see you all. Like I want you to know I see you all. So I wanted to start with another passage from my crazy book, right? We've seen before, Wild Chickens and Petty Tyrants, about ideas about mindfulness. And this piece he calls emotional baggage. Because it's some of what I want to think about today in our practice. So he writes, imagine a big sack that you carry around with you at all times. Into that sack goes everything you are holding on to, every disappointment, trauma, and wrong you've ever experienced. You can imagine that sack might get heavy. This image, the metaphor of emotional baggage, has penetrated our culture. How many times have you heard in a movie or on television or from a friend that, quote, she's got baggage, or he's carrying a lot from childhood? How much time and energy are taken up by what each of us are carrying? How much of your emotional energy is spent hauling your baggage and fighting to keep it tightly closed, holding heavy memories and beliefs out of awareness? Mindfulness practice can help us to identify, set down, and unload this baggage. The first step, of course, is simply to notice and really feel the weight of your heavy burden. Ancient stories and beliefs about yourself and the world, hardened judgments, childhood hurts. Mindfulness practice can help this to happen. And when it does, we have the opportunity to really look at, instead of stuffing away and dragging the baggage along. By taking the step of identifying and looking at our baggage, we have the opportunity to unpack all those stored experiences, perhaps saving the ones that are valuable and donating the rest to charity. Imagine what we could do with all that extra energy once it is freed from carrying around those emotional bags. Imagine how light we might feel. So today I was going to have us not be focusing on some of those things that we carry, but sort of how we can use this practice, how we can use Jewish teaching to give us context and do a little bit of practice and work together. So this week in Torah, we are in Parashat Bahalotcha, third portion in the book of Numbers. And at the end of the portion, we have this this piece about Aaron and Miriam and Moses. And we often look at this piece in terms of sort of the end of the little narrative where Miriam has been stricken with Sara'at, with what we often translate as leprosy, the same Sara'at that is talked about in the book of Leviticus, and Moses calls out a prayer of healing, El Na Rafanallah. We think about this text in terms of healing. And that's a great way to think about this text, the first prayer of healing. And Shabbat morning, we're gonna practice some healing and prayer together. So I'll see you Shabbat morning. But I was also really intrigued by this piece because how it starts is that Miriam and Aaron, Moses' sister and brother, are grumbling. They're grumbling quietly. They're grumbling where they think nobody is hearing them and listening. And they say, that Moses, like, he thinks he's so great. Haven't we been great leaders too? Don't we deserve God's attention? And look at him. He married a Cushite woman, a non-Israelite, right? And so they're grumbling. And God's like, don't you think I heard you say that? Don't you think I know you're grumbling? And so there's this ego interaction that's happening. Like they're feeling not paid enough attention to by whom? Maybe by God. They're feeling insufficient. They're feeling not paid attention to by Moses, right? There's this ego thing that's getting, their own needs are getting in the way. And we know that families are challenging. Families are wonderful and families are challenging. And, you know, we are right now either in different places from our family and trying to figure out how to relate to them when we can't see them. Some of us may have family in our homes that haven't been there for a while. And we're figuring out how to be with them all the time. And there's a lot of family dynamic stuff, of course, that happens in the Bible. Lots of sibling rivalry stuff, could be the bumper sticker of the Bible, from the beginning, right from Cain and Abel. There's a lot of blame and judgment and sort of all this kind of stuff that arises. That Torah keeps bringing back to us. So it must be something we ought to be paying attention to. Like, what's the baggage? What is the stuff that gets in our way of being able to be more present to what is, and not be schlepping those emotional bags with us? In Pirkei Avot, there's this beautiful teaching. We often only quote the beginning part of it. It says, Hillel says, do not separate yourself from the community. So we're not meant to be isolated spiritually. But then he goes on, it says, do not judge your neighbors or close ones until you've stood in their place. And then he goes on and he says, do not say something that cannot be heard, for in the end it will be heard. So I don't know if it's a coincidence. I don't think it's coincidence that Hillel clusters, right, relationships, right? Do not separate yourself from the community. Judgment, do not judge neighbors or close ones until you've stood in their place. And speech, do not say something that cannot be heard, for it will in the end be heard. All together, because they share this, they actually share a common thread. So, right, when Miriam and Aaron speak out, what's going on? There's some feeling of separation from the community, right? That's bringing them to speak out. There's judging Moses for what he's done, not necessarily standing in his shoes, standing in their own shoes. And of course, they're speaking, and what we say will be heard, even if we hear it. And in this case, of course, God hears it. All those things, it's all, Aaron and Miriam are not feeling connected to Moses, right? The ego is obscuring, their own needs are obscuring what they need to be seeing and what they need to be doing. And when that happens, we often turn around to blame, right? Because if we put others down, it makes us feel better in the moment. So how can we step back from that? How can we find a place of wholeness and healing through this kind of practice, remain connected to one another? So, you know, the healing part that happens with Miriam, of course, is when we say things, when we are disconnected, when we're not in that good space of relationship, it reflects an inner lack, an inner need, an inner want that requires time to reflect and time to heal. And what happens is that the people actually don't leave Miriam, right? She has to stay apart from the community, and they become responsible to her, and they don't leave until she's back among them. And so a mindfulness practice, like in this context, is not about erasing our experiences, right? We have the bags that we take with us, but we don't have to take everything with us. What can we donate? What is going to be helpful to us? How can we become more present to all of those underlying things that we carry with us? All of those challenging relationships, the places where we turn around and blame or push someone away in order to make ourselves feel better. How can we step back and just let go of the emotional overlay of that, so we can actually just see and experience actualities of what happens? So then we can act more clearly. We can use our experiences with clarity, as opposed to I've said this before, right? The emotion about the emotion, right? So we're human beings. We're going to have emotions. It's not that we're going to be robots and numb, but taking time to allow the things that are happening in us, the emotional experiences, the stuff that happens to us, to arise without judgment, so that we can see it clearly, so that we can be present to it, so it can just be part of who we are, and we don't have to get wrapped up in the emotion of, I should have, I wished I did, that judgment of self that then perpetuates challenging behaviors and challenging patterns in ourselves that then don't help us. And so the goal of being able to act rather than react. So I'm going to invite you to sit again. Actually, before I do that, as I always do, I'm going to unmute you all. If I can unmute you all. Can I figure out how to unmute you all? Because they've changed. Oh, just unmute yourselves. They've changed the latest control in Zoom again. I used to be able to just hit unmute all, and I can't now. So, any thoughts, questions? Anybody want to say anything before we're sitting again? Betty.
I really appreciated what you said about unloading, because in this time I've been unloading a lot of stuff in my house, and it just feels so good to feel lighter. Stuff ties you down, and I'm just talking about physical stuff, but also the emotional stuff, of course. So what you're talking about really resonates with me.
I think we have to start delegating some of our stuff to other people, as you said, get rid of some of our stuff, because as you might know, I don't know how to say no. And finding that gets in, that's now enough is enough. And you can say no without feeling you're hurting somebody, because it's important to let that person know you are involved with other things. So we have to find other people in our families to unload some of our responsibilities. And I think that's very healthy.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So let me invite you again to, if you need to reshift, but again, to be in a comfortable seat, stand, lying down, wherever you are. Close your eyes if that's comfortable. You just want to lower your gaze so you don't have other distractions, so you can be present to your own experience in this moment. And just start with sort of bringing just attention to your body, like where it's contacting the surface that you're sitting on. Notice how it where it's supporting you. And as you're sitting, recognize, notice where you may be carrying baggage in your body. You can allow your jaw to loosen, shoulder blades perhaps. Relax, lie down your back a little. Hands at rest next to you or in your lap and your legs. And just notice now your breathing, like the meditation at the beginning. When we're not thinking about it, we just breathe. But for right now as well, not to try breathing, just to be present to how your belly moves, how the breath just happens, the in-breath changes to the out breath, to the exhalation. Your body can just be in this moment. Now, gently, kindly, without judgment, bring to mind an experience or a memory, a time of blame. Because blame is about when we weren't ourselves were lacking. It might be a time, it was something that you did, It might be a time that you are the recipient of blame, that somebody else said something about you or to you. Whatever it is, as you turn toward this memory or this experience, gently, as best as you can, as you're witnessing, re-witnessing the experience, check in and notice what thoughts are present for you, what emotions might be arising for you, what body sensations you might be noticing as you gently hold this experience or remembrance. And without needing or trying, fix anything. Just begin to explore what's arising for you right here, right now with that. And if specific thoughts arise, as best as you can, try to just experience them as sensations of the mind, as events that come and go. And if there are emotions that are arising, to just name them, label them as they make themselves known to you. Oh, that is discomfort. Oh, that is anger. Right? Saying to yourself that, oh, shame is here, or anxiety, or guilt. Just stay with those for a few moments and recognize what is present to you in this experience. And now shift your attention to just any associated sensations in your body. Investigate these with interest, curiosity, even if they are unwanted or intense, just to be present to them in this moment. And if something is particularly intense or strong, be able to say to yourself, this is just a moment of difficulty. I can be with this, it's already here. With physical sensations, sometimes it's helpful to just take the intention of breathing into the sensation, expanding a little bit on the in-breath, softening a little bit on the out-breath. Just being present to the sensations as long as they're capturing your attention. And as you're sitting with this, you can ask yourself, can I let this be as it is? For after all, it's already here. Can I let it go? For after all, it's already happened. Does something need addressing? Is there some action I need to take? Is there an attitude I need to shift? A different perspective I might explore? So before we go on, I'm curious if or open for any thoughts, questions, reflections, or nothing.
I think in the moment that something occurs, that's what I was thinking about, you get the feeling. I mean, right away it either hits you in the gut. Or mostly it hits me in the gut. However, in thinking about the same situation now, many, many years later, I think I've come to terms with it. Therefore, I'm more relaxed. But anger comes back in the mind. But the sensation in my body isn't so bad anymore because I've dealt with thinking it through. I guess if we haven't tried to get rid of it, it's still gets tough. So I'm halfway there. No, maybe three quarters.
Everybody's different, right? And different people feel it in different parts of their body. And you know, all kinds of things bring back all kinds of sensations, whether it's emotional or, you know, inner experiences, body experiences, everybody's different. Mm-hmm. But to recognize that we have the ability to witness something, right? To be our own inner witness, which allows us to step out of a place of judgment, right? That judging mind that we often bring, or that emotional overlay of, you know, we have an experience and then we feel about that experience. We don't just feel the experience, but then we feel about the experience, and we put a whole story on how we feel about the experience. And that keeps us from actually seeing, like being present in the experience and then seeing it, so we can then take the next step from it and not be caught in it and not be dragging all that stuff with us. Right, to sit without judgment, to witness difficult moments in our lives, whether, you know, it's anxiety or guilt or blame or, you know, the sibling rivalry, like the difficult situation that we see in Torah, right, can shift us to something, to see something new, without further emoting, beating ourselves up, right, growing instead of settling into the baggage. And there's so much that's adding to what we're carrying these days. Right? There's like everything we had before, and now there's everything we've had, you know, since March, that is somewhat of a collective bag, and we're all carrying it differently. And we might even tend to judge like what we carry that's worse or easier than someone else's burden. And that's just all distraction. That's just all distraction. You know, reactivity, whether it's blaming or, you know, demeaning, like pushing people away to make ourselves feel better. Like that kind of stuff is quick. It might make us feel better in the moment. But being able to sit
with being able to see something more clearly, like that the process of being accountable to ourselves is a process that takes courage to look at ourselves, and it takes time. But it also means that we're connected to other people, like that our actions matter, that our lives have, that everything we do has consequence, that a mindful approach, a mindfulness practice to cultivate the awareness so we can create a space of choice, consciously choosing our action, is harder but longer lasting, right? And it gives us we're not looking to be, you know, emotionally numb, but to recognize that the waves that come, we have tools, we have ability, we have teachings, we have values, all that can help us navigate them in a way that helps us grow and move forward and not be just weighed down. I saw a lovely teaching from a colleague this week. The Hebrew, it's sound-wise, not spelling-wise for you Hebrew scholars out there. The word achzar in Hebrew is cruel. It's aleph chaf, the Zion Reish. Ach, the word ach in Hebrew, aleph chet would be brother. So it's by sound. But ach is brother, zar by sound is stranger. I love it. So achzar, by sound, right, is the cruelty is like the brother becoming the stranger, like the thing that that should be part of us becomes outside of us, right? When we push away who we should have in our lives to the level of stranger is cruelty. Because Judaism teaches that we're not just actually, we're responsible not only for our ach and achot, for our brothers, our sisters, our family, but we're actually responsible for the stranger, for the ger, for those who live among us. Yesterday in Musar, we were talking about the midah of achrayut, of responsibility, of connecting the ach, the brother, with the acher, with the other. That we have this connection to see the other not as something outside of us, but as part of us. So that experience of pushing the other away, right, in blame, in anxiety, in separating ourselves to somehow make ourselves feel better in the moment, won't change us, right? It actually keeps the focus off of ourselves when we're looking for that external reason to explain perhaps our own discomfort, our own frustration, our own happiness. We won't actually succeed in changing anything about ourselves. So in our Torah example back, I'll bring it back around to where I started, right? Because a mindfulness practice can help us not to forget to see the other, to see our brother, our sister as us, right? That we can become aware of consequences for our action, of the things that we hold, of learning to be present to our discomforts. And then being able to see that we can act from them, that they don't own us, that they're not bags we have to have weighed down all the time. So I'm going to close us with one more sitting time, thinking about, frankly, all of these challenging relationships, sibling relationships that we have in the Bible. It's not just Miriam and Aaron. There's Joseph and his brothers. There's Cain and Abel. There's Jacob and Esau. Like, our biblical characters are replete with baggage. So what I'm going to invite us to do to close together before we'll come back and say goodbye and any reflection or questions that you have is just, again, sit comfortably and imagine either the experience that you had before or some other piece of baggage that you're carrying, that what would it be like to let go of one piece of baggage that you drag along? Just sit with your breath. Gently call to mind something that you would describe as baggage that you take along without judgment. And just to see what would it take to let that go? What would it be like to let that be? What might you need to do to let that go? And it's actually not you, the baggage. It's something that you take with you. Not part of you. So are there any questions or reflections or anything you would like to share or ask before we close? Betty, go ahead. Yeah. You're muted.
Okay. I just wanted to say that I used to work with people around their emotions. And I think that emotions can provide information to us if we can step back from them. And you mentioned anger. I think when we feel anger, it's often a signal that something needs our attention. And that's helpful information. And then if we can do something about that, whatever needs our attention, it's a way to release the anger in a proactive way. It's not harming anybody. And maybe something will be fixed as a result of that flash of anger. Isabel, you talked about the flash of anger that you felt in your tummy. That's a signal.
I wish you all a slightly lighter load this week.
Thank you.
Good to see you all.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Good to see everybody.
Hi, thank you.
Yes, thanks.